This is Women's Rights, a podcast about women's ordination, written and produced by students at Smith College. Hi, I'm Carolina.
I'm Elena.
And I'm Casimira. We're your hosts for this episode of Women's Rights. This season, we are exploring the story of women's ordination in Reconstructionist Judaism, the United Methodist Church, Insight Meditation, and the Presbyterian Church, USA. To do so, we are interviewing women involved in each of these traditions, talking about women's ordination, activism, and the experience of being ordained. In this episode, we are going to look at Insight Meditation. In the United States, approximately two-thirds of the population would be described as religious. Yet Buddhism only accounts for 1% of the population and is spread amongst a number of Buddhist groups. One such group is Insight Meditation Society. Inclusion to Insight Meditation is not bound by membership or rigid doctrine, but shared values of the importance of meditation and mindfulness. There is no distinction made between members and non-members of the Insight tradition, since the main events held are classes and retreats where anyone can join the meditation practice.
Insight meditation is derived from Vipassana practice,
a form of meditation that originated in Myanmar, Burma. The Insight Meditation Society, or IMS, was founded in 1976 by Joseph Goldstein, Sharon Salzberg, and Jack Kornfield, who had studied insight meditation in India and Burma. Upon coming back to the United States, they realized there was an interest in this practice, so the IMS was established. Among the traditions we are studying this season, the Insight Meditation Society is the newest religious organization. This brings us to the question of today. What have been the experiences of women leaders in IMS?
To answer this question, we interviewed Rebecca Mary Bradshaw and Peggy Gillespie about Insight Meditation. Rebecca is a senior guiding teacher emeritus at the Insight Meditation Center in Barre, Massachusetts. She's been involved in Insight Meditation for over 30 years. Peggy Gillespie is a community Dharma leader and served as a Buddhist advisor at Mount Holyoke College. She has also been a member of the community for a great portion of her life. Both are accomplished and active IMS members, and we are excited to have them speak with us today.
To start off, we asked both Peggy and Rebecca about their role and how they would define their positions.
We first spoke with Rebecca, who shared her experience.
I'm a guiding teacher emeritus at the Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts. So that's the first big center that was established by Westerners in the United States in this particular lineage of Buddhism, which some people call insight meditation. Theravada Buddhism, as you've probably heard, is more maybe correct, or Vipassana. It's often called Vipassana tradition. So I've been involved there since I was almost your age, since I was 23. I'm also a guiding teacher emeritus of the Insight Meditation Community of Western Massachusetts in East Hampton, where for 20 years I led that community. So now I consider myself in my post-administrative phase of my teaching.
It is very interesting to learn how long she's been involved, even working in Barre, Massachusetts, where the IMS originated. Next, we spoke with Peggy Gillespie. Peggy's role was quite different, as she shares.
I'm the director of a nonprofit, social justice nonprofit called Family Diversity Projects. But on the side, I also teach mindfulness meditation, and I have for years. So I don't really have a title. I'm officially a community Dharma leader. That was a course that I took through Spirit Rock many, many years ago, and allows me to teach in the mindfulness or insight tradition. I was the Buddhist co-advisor at Mount Holyoke for many years, but I'm not doing that anymore. So I'm teaching some at the Insight Community of Western Mass. And I also teach at the teen retreat. Well, I'm not the teacher there. I'm a I'm called the, at this point, Wise Elder. I'm part of a core team there. You have to teach at IMS, you have to have gone through a whole rigmarole teaching tradition. And I have been going there for 20 years for the working with teenagers.
Through getting to know the roles of these women, we wanted to know about their experiences and how they came to be part of IMS.
Rebecca shared her story with us, talking about her family's beliefs and how she ended up in the IMS community.
I was raised Catholic till I was 6. Then my parents had a disagreement with the church. And we kind of got ostracized. They didn't do anything unethical, but it was just a whole... It was an Irish Catholic, very patriarchal church, and my parents had some trouble with that. And then my mom started teaching us Hindu meditation, because she had this Hindu guru at the University of Minnesota where she was getting her PhD in psychology. So she said she told us, taught us how to meditate, but all I remember she told us to sit and not think about anything, which if either of you have tried, doesn't work at all. Then we were Unitarian Universalists, which is where a lot of disaffected, spiritually minded, I guess, families wind up. Then, I was into Christianity for a while because they had great singing and we used to get high and go sing. That was a lot of fun. That's the main reason I liked it, was getting high with my friends and singing. That takes me through my teenage years. And then in college, I was a kind of a pagan, a Wiccan, you know what I mean? Earth, kind of earth religion type stuff. I was part of a coven. We were good witches. We weren't bad ones. So you can see, there's just always been this stream of kind of seeking. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 23, I was teaching in Nicaragua, teaching English. And one of the co-teachers, an American guy, said, talked about this retreat he went to that you didn't talk for 3 months. And I was young and adventuresome. And I said, I'm going to do that next year. And I did. I didn't really know what I was doing at all. I stayed 5 months and I was hooked. I could tell it found my spiritual home. And I haven't strayed since.
We really enjoyed hearing about Rebecca's journey and how it was so broad and still led her to the place she knew that she was meant to be in.
We then asked Peggy how she became involved in insight meditation and Buddhism and her first experiences with silent retreats. She mentions Joseph and Jack and Sharon, who are the individuals who later established the Insight Meditation Society.
Okay, well, this probably will make you laugh. It was following a boyfriend at the time. I was living in Crested Butte, Colorado, and there's a place that just opened called Naropa University up in Boulder. It was by a Tibetan teacher, Trungpa Rinpoche, and it happened. So he decided to sign up for I was working in theater there and doing, you know, it's a small ski area, and he decided to go to this class taught by Joseph and Jack and Sharon. Nobody had ever heard of them. They'd just come back from Asia, and it said that you were going to meditate 5 hours a day. And I said, ugh, who would ever want to meditate for that many hours a day? It sounded horrible to me. But he was there like a week or two. And he called me and said, you have to come here. This is amazing. These teachers are incredible. And they were very young. I was in my 20s. They were probably maybe 30, the teachers. So I went up there and I walked into this room where they were teaching and people were meditating, sitting, and they were talking. And it was like, you could say like a Cupid's arrow. Like I felt I'm at home. And I wasn't really searching for anything at that point, teachers or anything, but it was like something. And I stayed, I just moved. I stopped doing what I was doing for a few weeks and just stayed there and took the rest of the class. I'm not sure I understood what I was doing in terms of the insight practice, but I just loved being there.
Now that we understand how Peggy was led to insight meditation, we wanted to know if there was more to what called her to stay with the practice.
And the other thing that got me there, in essence, was taking LSD and mescaline and peyote in the, you know, remember I was in the 60s and all that stuff was just beginning to happen. And I'm not recommending anything for anybody, but it was, it brought me out of that kind of headspace that I you know, was, you know, kind of, I was voted the most intellectual in high school, although that was a joke really, but in other words, more in my head and, you know, a creative writer and actress, but I was also like not at all interested in spiritual stuff. And taking those drugs, especially out in nature, was like communing with trees and seeing, I mean, I could see just so much exquisite beauty, and I could see that there was something more than just the way I was seeing the world. Now, I would say, after having done long meditation retreats, for even the first one I went on, it was, people would say, oh, you know, meditation, you don't need drugs, you just meditate. And I always thought that was, I mean, ridiculous. After about 3 or 4 days on a silent retreat, which I went to after Naropa, it felt the same as when I was on the LSD, only it lasted the whole retreat. It was like blissful and gorgeous, and eating a carrot was like eating, like it was so beautiful. I remember a beet, you know, like the design and the beet, and it was just, it brought you, just like the drugs do, but meditation is a better way, I think. It brings you so much into the present moment, which is the whole basis of the practice, that you're not distracted. So that normally we just eat and, you know, we're talking and we're not really focused on what we're doing. But if you spend a bunch of days in silence and sitting, walking, meditation, you get very, very concentrated on what's happening to you in that, in the moment to moment existence.
It's so fascinating how those two can mimic each other. The focus on the present moment and how it changes your way of thinking is so powerful. Moving on, we asked Rebecca what led her to become a teacher.
So when I did that long retreat, at one point I do remember that I was like, wow, I really love to teach this thing. But in the insight meditation community, at least the kind of Buddhist lineage, you know, like I teach in lineage, that means that I teach because my teacher asked me to teach, who teaches because their teacher asked them to teach. So there's a lineage. So it's very frowned upon to have aspirations to teach, to have ambition to teach, because it's generally assumed that that is motivated by ego.
The cultural differences stood out to me, as ambition is a common and positively viewed trait in the U.S., Understanding this, we asked Rebecca if there was a difference in the treatment of women as teachers.
I feel like as far as choosing women or men to teach right now, it feels pretty equal. In fact, for a while, we had many more women teachers than men. So that part feels equal. I mean, historically, you know, the transmission is so skewed towards men. For 2600 years, the transmission was through male monastics. You know this, right? And you probably studied this a little bit.
Yes.
And the female monastics just weren't given any support, basically. So the female tradition died out. Now there's this whole thing of trying to bring that ordination back. And there's so much resistance especially in the East, but in some places in the West, of doing that. They come up with all these technical rules why it shouldn't happen and can't happen. So that, I think there's a weight of that that affects all of us, you know, because like the scriptures, to me, they're very male biased. They have a kind of male sound to them, which makes sense if the men are the ones who saved them and transmitted them, and they were monastics too, so they have a monastic bent to them. My big question I come up with is like, what's missing from the flavor of how we transmit these teachings, which to me is the feminine voice.
Regarding teachers, we asked Rebecca if there were any women teachers that shaped her journey in the IMS.
Well, my teacher was Michelle McDonald, and she taught from, you could say, more the feminine archetype. And I have a lot of masculine archetype energy, meaning initiative. When I talk about masculine archetype, I'm talking about doing, initiative, ambition, you know, all the that kind of, and the feminine archetype is more relaxing, being, settling back. So I'm very, I have a lot of willpower. Willpower is very like that masculine archetype. And so she just, I learned from her a whole different way of being in the world, relying less on, you know, my willpower and my determination, all these qualities that I have very strongly, and relying more on something you could call trust or openness or just a much less defended stance towards the world. So she was absolutely essential for me. But she was somewhat ostracized for that expression, because the expression, you could say there's two, have you heard this, two wings of Buddhism, the compassion and the wisdom. Have you heard that? They say that there's two parts of Buddhism, wisdom, compassion. She leaned much more towards the compassion side, but what gets kind of worshipped is the wisdom side, which again, I think is that imbalance. So the wisdom-y side, it much more focuses on kind of transcendence. How do you transcend suffering? How do you basically get above all of this? And the compassion side focuses more on, like, how do you be in suffering and care about it? And I think that more transcendent comes from the male monastic transmission. And I think that's so unbalanced if that's the only way you're looking. I think it's important to know how to rise above all your suffering, and right, but if you can't get in there and care about it, like, what good are you?
In discussing this, we were curious about how this can be applied to sexism, and Rebecca shared great insight about this topic and how the history of Buddhism has a direct correlation to the present state of sexism in the IMS.
And the sexism is subtle. On the surface, we're post-sexist. There's as many female teachers as male teachers and all that. But the sexism, like, it's more little subtle things that happen that show a kind of an imbalance,
yeah,
and a preference for something that's more patriarchal, actually. So I think, you know, that we have that influence from 2,600 years, but we also live in a patriarchal culture. I hope you know that. Yeah. And so we have our internalized patriarchal conditioning, all of us, you know. And so those two collude, the 2,600-year history of it being transmitted by male monastics, and then the kind of internalized patriarchal conditioning, which I'm sure you get here all the time. It's you're busy all the time, right? You don't have a spare moment. It's ambition. It's energy. It's doing, it's determination, it's willpower, it's all of that, right? Because that's what the culture values. But that's only half of who we are.
In understanding the current state of gender equality within the IMS, we then asked Peggy if she had seen any changes in regards to women's roles as teachers and leaders during her time at the Insight Meditation Society.
Yes. I'd say absolutely. The women, like, just like when I was younger and when I was at Smith, you know, women were just beginning, you know, it was just the beginning of the women's movement. And they were, suddenly there were women going to medical school and law school. I mean, at the time before that, hardly anybody did that kind of stuff. You know, it was, you become a teacher or secretary, even if you went to college, there was not nurse. In the Buddhist world, there were way more male teachers, and certainly from the East, you know, it was almost all male. I mean, I'd say 99.9% male teachers who had come to the West. Now, the teacher training programs that Insight Meditation offers, either at Barry or in Spirit Rock in California, my guess is that maybe it's at least half women, if not more. Same thing with people of color. It's way, like, that has shifted radically. It's all interwoven. You know, I'd say meditation would be of no value if it wasn't leading us to action in social justice, and making everybody valued and doing it in our own little ways, each person.
After all that we've learned, we asked Peggy what kind of obstacles need to be overcome to achieve a true sense of equality within the IMS.
I mean, there has to be extensive work in every religious organization, and not just in this particular tradition, but just there's so much work that's done that, you know, people take all these DEI workshops, and they can be very helpful. Like every teen retreat that we teach at, we bring in this wonderful teacher of diversity education to work with the volunteer staff before the retreat starts, because, you know, you could say, well, we're all like, some of the people that are volunteer staff are psychiatrists and long-term psychologists and people like myself, you know, that are volunteering because we love teenagers and we want them to live a bit happier lives. But we, you know, so the education is like ongoing. I mean, I could say, I teach diversity work, I've done it, so I should, oh, I don't really need to go to that workshop. But every time I go to that workshop each year, I learn, you know, it's like, you have to keep learning. And some of the men that are running these centers, they've got a lot of work to do. You know, they're not, they might mouth the words, but are they really making it, you know, making sure that the power is held equally, and really respecting women, trans, non-binary, you know, to not just say we're welcoming. Or so I think in all the cases of learning to be more focused on equality, it just has to be an ongoing commitment, especially and fighting, really fighting what's going on in the world, not ever giving in.
Insight meditation in the United States remains a popular form of American Buddhism. The women in insight meditation play important roles, whether they are students or teachers, and insight meditation would be a lot smaller without them.
We hope that while listening today, you learn more about insight meditation as a whole and the roles that women have played in this tradition.
In our next episode, we'll look at women's ordination in the Presbyterian Church, USA.
That concludes our podcast for today. Our theme music was Bird Therapist by Craig MacArthur, uses an attribution, non-commercial, share-alike, Creative Commons license. Special thanks to Rebecca Bradshaw and Peggy Gillespie. Also, thanks to Dan Bennett and Meredith Richter of the Smith Learning, Research, and Technology team. And thanks to the Religion Department that supports public-facing student writing at Smith College. Tune in next time on Women's Rights.
Willpower is very like that masculine archetype. And so I learned from her a whole different way of being in the world.